This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a minute. It's been a while since we've been able to get together like this with summer months, travel, and so much going on. And frankly, me being in school, this is, for those of you who haven't seen this already, this is the campus. This is the campus at the seminary where I am. Isn't it lovely? And I like to work outside because it's so lovely, at least while the weather is still permissible. And this is also the battleground of the Battle of Gettysburg just behind me. Literally. I'm on the battleground. So this, all of this space is what that is. More on that later. Glad to have with us our dear, dear friend. He is the founder of DailyCoast.com, the largest online progressive community. Marcos Melitzis joins us from Chicagoland. And first things first, Marcos is debating, y'all. Y'all know me. Is debating whether to hook the work he has to do today to go to Wrigley. And I said, that's not, you know, first of all, I'm going to take the burden off of him. I'm going to bear this cross for him. I am making the decision on your behalf. What time does the game start?
It starts at 2:20. If it was a night game, it would be a no-brainer. 2:20 Central.
I am making the decision. I will bear all responsibility. Whoever you're accountable to today, give him my number. You are going to that game on your behalf and on mine, okay?
All right.
Because you know, Gunwev, if I was there with you, you'd be physically taken. We'd just be. That wouldn't even be.
Like the New York Boston night game, man. You guys are lucky. Like, if it was a night game, there would be no doubt about it. It's this 2:20 start. It's a rough one.
I have to confess.
Get some work done.
I have to confess. You know, my son and I, Yankee fans lifelong. But when I took him to Wrigley for the first time, he was still. Was he still in high school? Maybe his last year of high school, something like either last year of high school, freshman year of college. He was blown away. He said and he's been to Fenway too, which has its own, you know, atmosphere. But he was so moved by the atmosphere and in Wrigley, we had a ball. So
it's a shrine. It's a holy site of baseball for sure.
It is. So yeah, you're going. Marcos, everybody. If any of you want to put in the comments, Marcos, go to the game. Feel free. We'll put the screen.
Don't pressure me.
Go to the game. What's the guy's name? PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong. I mean, you know, you gotta go to the game, man. It's historic. So, and we meet just because, watch this, watch how I transition, y'all. Just because the government is shut down doesn't mean we need to shut down from baseball. Hi, y'all saw what I did there? So, everything comes back to that. Marcos, you and I have covered numerous shutdowns over the years. What's different about this one?
I mean, lots of things are different. For starters, I don't think I've ever seen Republicans so brazenly lie about the shutdown. It's a system of Donald Trump and his brand of politics where there's no truth, there's no reality. But this notion that it's the Democrats' fault, which we can get to in a minute, because they want transgendered something-something and illegal aliens something-something. And it is utterly nonsensical and ridiculous and patently absurd. And Trump can't even contain his glee at the thought of government being shut down. So he can't even this is a bad thing and it's a Democrat's fault. Like it's just this weird sort of mishmash of ridiculousness and, they're a bunch of clowns. And I think it's important for everybody to realize though, Republicans can open up the government today if they want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is nothing stopping Republicans from opening the government today. They are blaming Senate Democrat because of the filibuster. The filibuster can be eliminated on a party line vote, and Republicans, Democrats did it for executive branch nominations and lower judges. Republicans didn't did it for the Supreme Court, and Republicans this year have used have weakened the filibuster in several procedural matters. For example, the big beautiful bill raises the budget deficit. Supposedly that's not allowed by Senate rules, right? Well, they change the rules. Republicans can change the rules anytime they want, right? So this notion that it's a Democrat's fault is patently absurd. They could literally eliminate the filibuster, pass a budget, things are done, right? But they don't want to. And this is what I don't understand. They're actually enjoying shutting down the government. They think it's funny. They think it helps them somehow, not in the polling. I think it helps them in their anti-government crusade, right? They're the party that hates government. So yeah, shutting it down is all fun and games for them right now. And there you go. That's the answer. What's different? They think it's fun and games.
Yeah.
In the past, there was a sense of like, yeah, this is not a good thing. How do we resolve it? This time, they think it's fun and games.
Right. And what are they getting? Are they getting anything from their own constituency out of this? Is it playing? I know in times it's been different. You know, you depending on who did it, how it was done. Well, first of all, let's do this. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's the shutdowns you and I have seen, Lord have mercy, over the past 30 years, even going back to Clinton and Gingrich. The Democrats were rarely, if ever, responsible for shutdowns. Am I right about that, or am I being too generous? Or even touted them. I mean, that was never a political thing. You got to shut down.
Most of them were under Democratic administrations with Republican Congresses and Republicans blocking. Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to remember if Democrats shut down the government with Republican administrations. I'd be shocked that they haven't. But always the thinking in those situations was like, let's just pass an extension as they worked on the budget, right? That was always the solution. Let's pass an extension and then give us time to work on the actual budget. And then the budget process is a negotiation and, you know, you horse trade and you do the things you do to legislate, right? Legislation is sausage making. It's ugly. It's gross, but it's a process. So the shutdowns were really, we ran out of time, extend it and let's finish the budget.
Yeah.
There's zero interest with Republicans right now, and Donald Trump in particular, to negotiate on the budget. And another thing that's different, oh my God, so many things are different. Another thing that is different is that in the past, if the Democrats negotiated something, that's what the budget was.
Right
now we have a situation where Trump can say like, you guys funded the Department of Education, I'm shutting it down anyway. Mm-hmm. How do you negotiate with somebody who then can throw away the fruits of those negotiations and do whatever he wants anyway? It dramatically changes the balance of power and the negotiating power. And Mark, we should talk about what this means for Democrats and Republicans when Democrats take power, because everything that's happening right now, it's giving permission to the next Democratic president to do whatever the fuck he wants or she wants. And Supreme Court said it's okay. So that means firing Republicans from commissions and regulatory agencies. And it means getting rid of ICE, because who cares if Congress funded it? Presidents can do whatever they want. I mean, it really changes the way that, and it actually kind of makes the country a little bit ungovernable, but maybe Republicans need to see it on, you know, get the brunt of that on their end to like realize that maybe things need to change. But, I, in the past, you could negotiate in good faith.
Right.
And Trump has made it clear that he doesn't care what Congress thinks, says, appropriates, legislates. He's going to do whatever he wants.
Right.
So how do you negotiate with that?
Mm. You said a few things that we need to unpack. But the point I was making is not necessarily the Democrats have not done shutdowns, but it was never the goal. And there are probably more frequent examples of Democrats extending or doing a continuing resolution. You also said this changes that. You know, what should Democrats do when it's their turn? But we don't. I mean, Marcos, we don't ever do nothing. We always still take the high road. Well, you know, we don't want to do this. And if there's an opportunity to end the filibuster or do any of those kind of things, I think that's what we should do. But why don't we do it?
Yeah, I mean, a good example is Hakeem Jeffries, right, where you have J.D. Vance posting racist memes with a sombrero and saying, or Trump posted that racist memes, and they all think it's really funny. J.D. Vance thinks it's funny. And they asked Jeffries, do you think the president is senile? And he's like, no. Like, clearly, first of all, he's clearly senile. He's clearly losing it. I mean, this is not even like controversial, but there's still that like, oh, we must keep the high ground and I'm not going to say something bad about. I don't understand. This is a different world. It's a different brand of politics. And I will say that the Democratic nominee for president in 2028 is going to be the candidate who best captures that anger and promises to use all the tools that Donald Trump has given the presidency and turn the tables on Republicans. And right now, you know who I see doing that more than anybody else? Freaking Gavin Newsom. I don't even like Gavin Newsom.
Right.
He's winning me over because he's playing the game. Everybody else is keeping the high road. And I even have Democrats like, oh, Gavin's being a little mean. I don't know about that. Play the freaking game.
Right.
Clearly it works. I mean, Trump has given you the model. The old way of just these, you know, we're going to keep the high road and we're going to talk like we're, you know, we have something shoved up, you know, where, and that era is done.
Yeah.
Talk human.
Yeah.
Be a little mean. People are angry. Funnel that anger. Get them excited. And right now, the only person doing that, shocking, is Gavin Newsom. Now J.D. Pritzker, governor here in Illinois, he's fighting. Now he doesn't have the mean streak that Gavin. Gavin is an a-hole, and I never liked Gavin because he's an a-hole, and it's come up in multiple different scenarios. He's just kind of an a-hole.
Well, Marcos, just inform, because you're there in California, and people like us have not always had an affinity for Gavin, but he's making a strong case now because he's standing up to Trump. That might just be the deal. But refresh our memories, especially from a political perspective, why Gavin is an a-hole to you and to other people in the state.
So, this stuff is going to be public. It's going to get hashed out in public anyway. So I guess I should talk about it. So, at one point, he had an affair with his best friend's wife.
That's right. That's right. I remember now. Yeah.
I don't think there's any bigger a-hole kind of thing you could possibly do. And if he crossed that line, it makes me wonder what other lines won't he cross? That seems to be. And he was married to Guilfoyle.
Right.
even politically, he's got, and politically it bothers me less because sometimes you gotta like twist some arms to get things done, and California is a one-party state, and he kind of gets his stuff done in a fractious caucus, so people, you know, they get some rough feelings about him sort of strong-arming politically. And I don't mind, you know, in politics you got to get stuff done, and I think his overall record is conventionally solid. Like I there's really nothing I look at and go like, oh, that was bad politics. Like, for example, people are complaining that he is he quit offering Medi-Cal coverage to undocumented immigrants. and the state has like a $30 billion budget deficit. You gotta plug the hole. When the program was first passed, supposedly it was going to cost $3 billion. It ended up costing $15 billion. Like sometimes you just can't afford certain things. And so I don't fault him for that. We can't just give everything to everybody. And we as progressives sometimes kind of forget that. Like sometimes we forget that there's a practicality to governing. But to me, it's like those character flaws. But now he's using being an a-hole to match Donald Trump's energy, and he's driving Republicans crazy.
Yeah.
And it's motivating people, because where Jeffries and where Chuck Schumer really failed as leaders in the House and Senate is that we ran an existential campaign against Donald Trump saying that our democracy was at stake. And it turns out that everything that we were afraid of has happened times 10, even worse than we imagined. And yet they in the House and the Senate have acted like the loyal opposition as opposed to the fierce resistance.
Thank you.
And Mark, you remember very well Barack Obama winning the presidency, conventional politician. And Republicans literally set out to say, we're going to make him a one-term president. We're out to destroy him. They acted like we had elected Satan.
Yep. Yep.
And so how do they amp up against Democratic presidents? Like each one of them is an existential threat to the very nature of our foundation of our country. Mm-hmm. We actually have a existential threat to the foundation of our democracy. And Hakeem and Shumway are like writing sternly worded letters and trying to negotiate. Like, no, you had to act like an actual resistance, not an opposition, a resistance. Because this is where we're at right now. I mean, yep. they're making mockery of the Constitution. It's a resistance.
Yeah.
Gavin Newsom is meeting that moment.
He is.
And people are desperate and hungry for that. And if it takes an a-hole of our own to meet their a-hole, okay, I'm aboard. I'm sorry.
Well, when they're obviously still in a position to control the narrative, unfortunately, and that's a whole nother flaw on our side in terms. I mean, you're doing what you're doing. You know, nobody, you have Daily Coast, but few others are doing anything. And we don't have the algorithms. We're not spending money on social media like they are.
He's weaponized the actual government itself, using government websites to send out the message that it's a Democrat fight.
That's right. So with that in mind,
we got to use those tools when it's our turn.
You have to fight if that's all you have. Remember when in 2020, we were like, we weren't crazy about Joe Biden, but you needed an old white dude versus old white dude, old white dude crime on old white dude crime to win that election. You may need a holology.
Yeah.
In this a hole. And I'm saying that y'all on the grounds of a seminar.
And that's why I didn't use the real word, because I'm trying to be, although I did slip in an F word there.
So I'm getting my degree in theology, and we're talking about a-holeology. I hear a paper coming. This moment of a-holeology. You need a-holeology to fight a-holeology. So I didn't plan to go here, but here's a $1 million question. Just we won't spend a minute on this. We'll get back to the shutdown, y'all. Welcome your comments, especially your votes as to whether or not Marcos should hook work today and go to the Cubs game. He's in Chicago. Y'all see the Sears Tower over his shoulder?
Right there.
Your right shoulder? Is that your right shoulder? Yeah. So then, Marcos, because I've been watching this and wondering what's going on here. Is the conversation now Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris, or is Kamala kind of stepped aside? And I admit I haven't read much of the book yet. I'm going to get on that this week, and we'll talk about that next time. Is she kind of ceding the ground to him, or what's going on? What do you think?
It's going to be a crowded primary, and nobody's clearing the field for Kamala Harris, and she's welcome to run like everybody else. Again, I think it's going to be. People are looking, Democrats are looking for somebody to meet the moment. And the fact that Trump can't get reelected does not change the fact that J.D. Vance is going to be running a bunch of MAGAism is not dead, and MAGAism is predicated on being a-holes. So I think it's going to be the candidates who can match that moment. I mean, we may have AOC running. We may have Mark Cuban running. Who the heck? Like, everybody's, it's going to be a free-for-all. It's just going to be, you know, and then you're going to have the Pete Buttigieg's, and you're going to have probably J.D. Pritzker, and you're probably going to have Josh Shapiro, who has a 60% approval rating in Pennsylvania, which is absurdly high in these hyper-partisan times.
Who is that with the approval rating?
Shapiro in Pennsylvania. Josh Shapiro. And I'm going to have to dig a little bit more into what's going on there, because he's found some formula that is working. Governors are not popular anymore. Politicians are not popular. And 60% in a battleground state is shockingly, and he would beat in this poll. It's a Quinnipiac poll today. He would beat J.D. Vance by double digits in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
So we're going to have some compelling candidates, but I think, is Shapiro an a-hole? I don't know. Maybe.
Well. We had that story about him saying, you know, what was taken to be sexist. You know, he said, I can't play second to a woman.
Maybe not the right kind of a-hole.
But don't need that. A-holeology, y'all. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, this is interesting. Have you had a chance to read her book?
No, and I'm probably not going to, just to be really? Honest. Yeah.
I mean, she now the one highlight is that's been, you know, making the rounds is how she feels as though she messed up by not encouraging Biden to step down, and how that was all about his ego. And the Bidens, I don't think, have commented, which is damn.
To me, it's just too soon. It's just too depressing to relive what could have been and what ended up happening. So it's hard for me to read stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody wants to do a 15,000 word summary book report on it, like, I'll read that. But
okay, I'll do that.
Honestly, like, when I read books, I read science fiction. It's my escape. Like, politics is depressing.
yeah. No, I'd be happy to do that for you. I'm gonna read it. Okay. And I'll do a summary. That's the muscle I'm flexing.
Ooh, let me interview you about it then.
That's the muscle I'm kind of flexing right now, since I'm reading so much in school anyway.
Okay. Yeah. I would love to interview you about it.
Okay. And we're still trying to get Mom Donnie. He's supposed to be joining us. We want to get him on Thursday Coast with Marcos. So we can talk about all the things happening in New York. As you all know, Eric Adams dropped out. Nobody likes Cuomo. That's just not changed. It was a reflex in the primary. Those who did vote for him, they saw the dad. You know, they saw the dad. And there's still a generation of New Yorkers, a lot, who worked in government for his father in New York. And so, I heard people say that to me, said, Mark, we didn't know Mom Donnie. The only name we saw was Cuomo, and we didn't, you know, Adams wasn't on the Democratic ballot. But now that they know, oh, this is who this is, Andrew is not the father. So that's a wrap.
I hope so.
No, I think Mom Donnie is going to win.
I do too. I just, politics can throw curveballs. But Mandani is at his best when he's laser focused on cost of living. This is something I've been writing about. Like, this is something that Trump did in his presidential campaign, where he promised to lower prices on day one.
Right.
Voters aren't sophisticated enough to be like, oh yeah, so how are you going to accomplish that? Because that's a really ridiculous promise that nobody. Right. But I don't even know if it matters, because I think what voters really are listening for is they're listening for a signal that says a politician actually is tuned into their pain. Right. So a big sort of fault in a Democrats campaign, Biden, Kamala, and me included, because this is stuff I was writing. So I'm not casting stones. Like, this was a learning experience, is that we were focused on how much better the economy was doing than our, you know, peers, like how inflation was coming down, how unemployment was at record lows. Like, we were trying to hype up the good news aspect of the economic indicators and compare that to the rest of the world, when people were hurting.
Right.
People were hurting.
Right, right, right.
Despite all those, you know, economic indicators, people were hurting. So it was a miscalculation. I think Mandani like crushed it in the primary because, you know, the free buses and rent freeze, and those are all like they signal. And I don't know if it matters if he can accomplish them or not. I'm skeptical of how he can pull some of that stuff off. Just governing is hard. But at least you're signaling to voters that you understand that they're struggling and that you're going to try to make things better for them. And I was struck by an article that I read about this MAGA family in Georgia. And I made fun of them in a story in Daily Kos. Very, very MAGA. But what really struck me is that the wife of the couple said that the only Democrat she ever voted for was Barack Obama because he promised free community college. Now, here's like the MAGA, white, racist Southern Georgia voted for a Black Democrat because he promised free shit. And it really behooves Democrats to learn to not just promise free shit, but then to deliver it in a way that people know that they just got free stuff. So, for example, child tax credit. Why is it a freaking tax credit? Why not have it be a check signed by Joe Biden, mailed to every person, every parent who qualifies for it? Right. And then you can say, if Republicans win, you won't get that check anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Keep getting your government Biden check. Like, think that way. Why do we hide stuff? And Democrats love to do this. They love to hide all these benefits, like clean energy upgrades. Like, it's a tax credit. Why not be a check? Because then people see, oh, Joe Biden, the president, he's for me. And you know what else it does? It protects those programs, because if a Republican wins, he's going to want that check to go out under his name or her name, right? And so it's a way to, like, lock in some of these benefits. Social Security checks. Have the freaking president sign them. Yep. Make it very clear. Remember those hands off my Medicare signs back in the party? Why aren't Medicare benefits signed by the president?
Right.
Like, everything should be branded in a way that people know exactly where it came from. Mark, I don't know about you, but I hate paying taxes. I believe in taxes. I believe in the things that they pay for. I will always vote to support the services that the taxes provide. I don't like tax time. I don't like it. I don't think anybody likes tax time. We may appreciate what the taxes buy us. Nobody sits here and like does their taxes and go, oh, thank God I got, you know, it's $500 less than it would have been because of the Democratic bill that passed that gave me a tax credit for, you know, for upgrading my furnace.
Yeah.
You hide the benefits. So people like say, what's government done for me? I just have to pay taxes. right? That's what people think. And so that's why I actually appreciate Donald Trump for sort of teaching people that, because I, you know, Latinos voted for Donald Trump, not because of his great immigration promises or treatment of the community, but 40% of them voted, and a big chunk of them did so because they believed that he was going to lower grocery prices. Because when you can't afford to eat, you don't care if it's a fascist. You just need to eat. Your number one priority is to feed your family. It's not, so we consider if we have, you know,
especially for a constituency that has come from places where that has happened.
Yeah.
A lot of folks came here to escape hunger.
Yeah.
Where they were. Right.
So you promise them cheaper groceries. Again, we wish they were sophisticated enough to be like, yeah, how are you going to do that, dude? Like, you're so full of crap. But they're not, right? People, we can just accept that. It's not elitist. It's just reality to say that the vast majority of voters are struggling to survive. They're working multiple jobs to make ends meet. And if somebody says, I'm going to make your life a little easier, they're going to respond to that.
Yep.
And Trump did that with no intention of delivering, but he said the words. Mamdani did that and won the primary. And I think it's going to win him the Obama won the first time on free college, at least won this white, southern, rural Georgia voter who is clear MAGA, voted for freaking Barack Obama because he promised free community college. Like, start promising this stuff. And then when you deliver it in a way where people go, oh, it was President AOC, it was President Gavin Newsom who got me this benefit.
Yeah.
And Trump destroyed all those norms where we had to, like, you know, the president had to be above it all and we had to be nonpartisan. Trump got rid of all that. So now who is going to take advantage of that and use that to brand? Because Trump ain't giving anybody anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, somebody should do it on a local level. And many listeners know this well. When Marion Barry became mayor of Washington, D.C., he created the mayor's summer youth leadership program. Every kid in high school for generations had a paid summer job in Washington, D.C. He never lost an election. And so I mean, what that's called is direct constituent services.
Yes.
Direct delivery. That is politics 101. Mm-hmm. You know, and some people get so sophisticated. Well, you know, that's buying votes. No, it's not. When you're providing a legitimate service to people, it's not. So, you know.
Everybody can take advantage of the program and they can still vote for whoever they want. But if they like the program, if they like government providing them benefits, because right now people think, and you see this across the board, people don't think the government does anything for them.
Yeah, they don't.
It's
they don't.
So divorced from the benefits. Even people, I mean, government hands off my Medicare, right? They are so divorced that they think that the government services they receive aren't government services.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. They don't even know that they are. They don't know what they are.
Yeah, like rural America know that all their hospitals exist only because our states, our blue rich states, are subsidizing them. They don't know that.
Yeah, they don't. They have no
idea. Finding out now. They're finding out. But even a notion like rural America needs to freaking learn how urban America subsidizes everything they have. Everything. It's rural broadband, their schools, their water systems, their did I say broadband or postal service, their social security offices, all of that is they are money losers. And so they sit there and vote for Donald Trump's going to run government like a business. Yeah. You know what business does? It cuts out the money losers. And guess who the money losers are? You. And this is the great irony of Trump winning the White House is that they thought by cutting government, it would hurt urban America, right? Because they still think, oh, it's black people on welfare and Latinos who are, you know, getting free health care and they're illegal immigrants. That's our sort of the reality is we subsidize. This is the economic powerhouses, right? Chicago, it's New York, it's Philadelphia, right? San Francisco, LA. These are the economic powerhouses that literally subsidize the rest of America. And they're going to find out because as Trump comes in and he slashes the programs he doesn't like, which are programs that serve people, the people being served ain't you and me. And Mark, like New York and California, we can pay our own benefits for our own people because we are rich states. They can't do that. Iowa's like, oh, we need a federal bailout. You know what? No, screw you. Iowa can bail you out. And you know what? So if Iowa wants to raise taxes on Iowans, to bail out Iowans, all the power to you. Because you know what? That's what the blue states are doing now. We're taking care of our own. You want to take care of your people, take care of your people. Don't be asking California and New York to subsidize you when you demonize, when you repay the charity that liberals have been giving rural America for decades. Decades they've been subsidized. And that's been charity. They repay that charity by with racism and sexism. And by electing the very embodiment of bigotry into the White House, that's how they repay this charity. So you know what? I'm glad that Trump is cutting a lot of those programs. I'm glad those farmers are losing their farms. Screw them. We can buy our freaking food from Peru and Chile and elsewhere.
Well, and again, being where I am and I have a class. You're going to love this. One of my classes with Professor Pamela Cooper White this semester,
is the psychology of white Christian nationalism.
Oh man, I want to go to that class.
I knew you do. I knew you would when I said that. Now here's the thing.
I'll sneak in the back.
Come on. Everything that you said, racism, the sexism, the rural America being the beneficiaries of urban America's subsidizing, and now it's totally metastasized into probably one of the loudest manifestations of white Christian nationalism in history in this country. And, you know, we got a lot to catch up on. Charlie Kirk and the modernization of him and folks getting canceled. We're in utter totalitarianism. Mm-hmm. When Jimmy Kimmel, who ain't like you and me, can get canceled.
Yep.
You know, so.
They didn't even talk about Charlie Kirk.
I know.
He was making fun of Donald Trump's not caring about Charlie Kirk.
Well, we didn't talk about Charlie Kirk. So I was giving a talk at the Global Network for Public Theology about racism and Christian nationalism. And when we signed off, it was virtual. It was supposed to be actually out there in at Fuller Seminary, which is out your way. But because it's global, Marcos, check this out. A lot of people who participate in the Global Network for Public Theology travel from around the world. But because of Trump and ICE, nobody wanted to take that risk. So we then went from in person to virtual. So I'm giving this talk. I'm doing my academic presentation. First one, by the way, in a public forum. And literally after we signed off the Zoom, Charlie Kirk is shot. Mm. While we're talking about Christian nationalism. So what were your thoughts? Where were you and what were you doing when you saw that? And what was your reaction to all of that?
Yeah, no, I missed the actual shooting because I was at a lunch meeting and we were off our phones. Amazingly. And I get back home and everybody's freaking out and it's like, holy freaking shit. And my immediate reaction was obviously I'm reading all the right wing reaction, blaming leftists and liberals and claiming it's a transgender this. And the whole time it's just this frustration, because if it was up to us, that guns wouldn't be as readily available to murder people. And there was this clear irony because I don't want Charlie Kirk assassinated. I don't want anybody, but I also don't want school children assassinated or, you know, people in a synagogue or a temple or church or school. But there was that irony that Charlie Kirk said that it was absolutely, quote, rational to tolerate gun deaths every year for the Second Amendment. So he died a martyr for his cause, and I can respect that. But let's not pretend that liberals want this kind of world. We're literally asking for fewer guns and for more support services for troubled, mentally ill individuals and the kind of things that would lower the incidences of gun deaths, and they fight that. So I don't know. It's don't blame us.
Yeah, you're right about that. A couple more things. I'm gonna promise let you go, and then you're gonna go. You got to get to the game. Not an option. It's not a request.
I really want to go.
And I need you to post some pictures to prove you were there. So but what was it was right on the tip of my tongue. What was it? Oh, you posted a story just before we went on the air about China and they're being bolstered at the expense of U.S. farmers. Can you touch on that?
yeah, no, it's there was the Treasury Secretary was reading a text from the agricultural secretary, and it was captured in a in a photo from the Associated Press because, you know, these guys really know how to do operational security, but her emails. And in it, basically, the Secretary of Agriculture is saying that China has kind of has leverage over us because a couple of steps. So Trump's tariffs have and trade war with China. And remember, he 200%, 300% with China. They stop buying American soybeans. They are the world's largest consumer of soybeans. They consume 60% of the world's soybeans. The United States was a major supplier of that. During Trump's first term, the Trump did his tariff shtick, and China started buying soybeans from Brazil. And it cost, Trump had to bail out soybean farmers to the tune of like $22 billion. It was a large amount. So these soybean farmers, having learned that tariffs were actually a killer and destroyed their markets, and seeing Trump promise even more and deeper tariffs, decided to vote for him again in even bigger numbers. I don't know, because maybe now there's like three trans women who can't compete at college swimming. Like, you know, what they made a decision what was more important. And apparently it wasn't their own livelihood. So now keep in mind with Biden, they could sell soybeans again, but that was gone. And Trump supposedly was going to, he wrote this thing like, tariffs are coming, farmers get ready to sell even more of your crops to Americans. Of course, that's not happening, right? Because that's not what it works. Americans aren't eating the quantity of soybeans that are produced in Iowa and Illinois and Ohio. And a lot of that grain is grain feed. It's for cattle, and there's, only so much. And a lot of it is export-focused. So even when they canceled USAID, they're like, yeah, $10 billion in foreign assistance. You know what that was? That was $10 billion that was purchasing American products that were then shipped overseas as relief aid, right? So it was basically another subsidy for rural America. Now you come in a situation where, there's actually a record soybean harvest. They have nowhere to sell. Argentina is kind of comes into the scene, right? So, all right, Brazil is soaking up a lot of that soybean export market. I know it's a little complicated. I'm sorry. Trump just bailed out Argentina with a $20 billion bailout. Did you know about this?
No, I didn't.
So Juan Milei, who is the right-wing crazy, he's a guy with a chainsaw that was with Elon Musk at the stage in CPAC. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was Milei, right? So Milei is a darling of MAGA. So he goes to CPAC because he took office, he cut benefits, pensions, social net, government programs, government agencies. He just like slashed it. And he's sort of the poster child of like, this is the way for economic advancement. Turns out it's not. Argentina's economy is in the gutter. They have elections, midterm elections at the end of October. So in order to try to stabilize the Argentinian economy to help Milei, Trump just sent $20 billion to Argentina. So that's step one. Now, USAID, the entire budget of USAID was $20 billion, just to keep it in context, right? All right.
Jesus.
Days after the bailout, Argentina signs an agreement with China where China can buy all the soybeans that it can't get from Brazil, can now buy them from Argentina. Basically stabbing American farmers in the back. So now, as the Secretary of Agriculture was texting Bassent, the Treasury Secretary, the U.S. has lost all leverage. Because at one point they had leverage in saying, like, you still need X million bushels or whatever they call it of soybeans, tons of soybeans. Not anymore. So China could tell the U.S. to F off. They lost all leverage. They don't need American soybeans. Those soybeans are going to rot in the field. So now they're all crying that, oh, there's one farmer in an Iowa town hall who was like, I hate to say it, but if you want us to survive, we're going to need another bailout. I don't want them to survive. I don't. they got bailed out last time. They voted for Trump again. Why would we want them to survive?
Mm.
It's worse. They make, you know, conservatives, you know, people like me who eat, you know, a lot of tofu, they call us soy boys. They think it's funny to make fun of me for my dietary choices. Why should I care about soy?
Right. And they want to bail out.
Yeah, I can get my soybeans from Brazil, too.
Wow.
I'm going to sneeze. Oh, went away. Okay. So it's been an interesting situation. And I don't – Trump's not making noise about bailing out farmers. I mean, he talked about, like, I'm going to use tariffs to bail out the farmers, to pay farmers. That's not legislation. That's not policy. That's just Trump running his mouth. I don't think Democrats are in any mood to help. Mm. I mean, if you're going to bail out the farmers, you better reinstitute all this, you know, the ACA subsidies, which Republicans are cutting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they're in the world for hurt. And, you know, in the end, what sucks is those farm shops are still going to exist, right? They're not going anywhere. They're just being bought up by billionaires, conglomerates, hedge funds. And they are obsoleting the family farmer. And yeah. What? They voted for this. This is literally the world they created. I don't know why any of us should care. They didn't care about us. In fact, they're busy hating us. And all hysterical about trans athletes, that affects nobody.
Right, right. No effect. No effect.
The stuff that actually affects you. You're really going to vote for Trump after he bankrupted you the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand that kind of thinking. I don't. And I've lost my patience for it. Biden tried to give these people, like, he's a lot of, like, the CHIPS Act, right, which builds factories, which was, I mean, it's been decimated by Trump. All these factories were being built in red districts, in red states.
Mm.
A lot of the big Build Back Better was being built in. You saw all these Republicans taking credit for their new bridges and new roads that they voted against. Why are we building stuff? Why are we spending money? Why are we subsidizing Red America when they've done nothing to repay our charity except vote in bigots and embrace bigotry and hatred and tyranny, fascism? So yeah. I'm kind of over it. So Trump yesterday or this morning, he announced that they were cutting all green projects in blue states. They're keeping the ones in red states, but they're cutting all the ones in blue states. Again, we're setting precedents. Let's do that again.
Yeah.
That works for me. Good. Yeah. If you don't vote for Trump, why should we get federal money if he's president? But that goes for rural America. In reality, so all that CHIPS money, all those factories, why weren't those factories being built in south side of Chicago or in Philly? Or, you know, in Compton and L.A., why didn't that economic development money go to places where our people are? Give them a reason to vote for Kamala Harris.
Yeah,
well, you said it's called buying a vote. No, it's called rewarding the people who brought you. And Trump is bringing that back. And I respect that. I actually respect it. You know, Democrats are like, oh, is it so undemocratic? You know what? I respect it. And if any Democrat is running for president and is talking about how, like, we got to go back to the old, no. This is the way now. If farmers want open markets, you vote for freaking Democrats. If three trans athletes somewhere that had nothing to do with you, if that bothers you more, okay, all the power to you. But then no, then who cares? Lose your farm. Nobody cares.
Do you watch The Mandalorian?
I do.
You see, you know, you realize what you just said, right? This is the way.
This is the way. Yes.
This is the way.
Trump. I mean, I'm at this point, I'm not even mad about the stuff Trump is doing. I'm taking notes. I'm saying, oh, you can do that now. Great. Goodbye, ICE. Next time there's a Democrat and president. Oh, we can do that now. Okay, let's cut all the programs in red states and let the farmers. I mean, the farms will still be there. They'll just be owned by some national conglomerate. Who cares if it's a factory farmer, family farmer or not? Like, yeah. Let's change the way politics are doing. But the way I do it gives people a reason to want to vote.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we are. We got it. This is connection. Right. And this is, I mean, voters are now consumers. That's inevitable. we got to give them a message that makes it where we can't be amorphous and nebulous and just milquetoast. What is going on? What is it that I am providing you to vote for me? It's just that simple. Because this other fool is doing it. And he's even lying about it, but it's still, he lies about what he's going to do. We don't even lie or tell the truth about what we're going to do. It's just, you know, it's abstract. And it's, and that's why, you know, the criticism a lot of times of our side, being the elite the coastal liberal elite intellectuals, sometimes that's true. You know, and I'm saying that as somebody in an institution of higher learning, we still have to speak to people where they are. You know, and hear their concerns in a very, we can't be lofty, you know, and heavy. So it can't be bourgeoisie. It can't be the in this struggle, because this is a struggle. This is, we got to start thinking about it like that too. We have to see our enemies in struggle with us, and we engage them on a field in which we can win. And stop, you know, sticking our heads in the sand.
Yeah, and big part of that is actually having honest conversations with those people that. Yeah, you need to vote for us if you want help.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a patronizing, so we're going to, you know, government help. Like, they don't want government help, right? But if they start talking about government benefits, like, you want these government benefits, you got to vote for us. You want child tax credit? Here's a check. Signed by Joe Biden. Now, if you vote for Donald Trump, you're going to lose his check.
Joe Biden told a union leader, and the union leader told me they were somewhere, and Joe Biden said, the biggest mistake I made, man, was not putting my name on that check.
Mm-hmm. People, I still hear people talking about Trump checks.
Yeah,
like people are like saying, "Oh, we got Trump check the first time. Why haven't we gotten one this time around?"
Right.
Like it's the Trump check. Like it's the thing. It you give people money, they remember. So give them money. You're gonna give it to them anyway through the tax code by paying less. No, just give them the fucking cash. That's it. That's it. Simple. That's politics. That's like Tammany Hall politics. That's what it used to be. Like, you used to have a machine, right? And the machine rewarded you for working for the machine. You work for the machine, you work for the mayor, you got a job. You have to do the work, but then you got a job.
Right.
That's money.
Right. And it was not corrupt. There's nothing corrupt about that. This is what it's all about.
Yeah.
So bottom line, as we know, the Republicans can end this shutdown. As Marcos has said, they're playing with it. They're doing... Last thing on this, and I promise we'll go. The Trump is also using this as an opportunity, apparently, to cut more of the government, because he doesn't want these. Let's face it, Marcos. These guys really don't want the federal government, to function anyway. If they could literally dissolve it, they would, wouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the vast majority of it. I guess they'd keep the Border Patrol and the Pentagon, right. And that would be it. Yeah.
So the American Federation of Government Employees. Mm-hmm. He nullifies their contract. And then, but the only union within AFG the only group of people in the AFG union that he keeps under the union contract is Border Patrol, because Border Patrol endorsed him.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But now we know we can play these games. Again, that's allowed. Again, I'm taking notes. I'm like, that's allowed. I literally have one of my writers who is going through court decisions, and we're going to start a whole series on the new powers that the Supreme Court has granted or that Trump has given himself that we can then use for our agenda when we're in power. But we need a president that would use it. Not somebody like Biden who's like, we got to go back to norms. No, we need somebody who, and this is why, like, right now I'm wondering if Gavin Newsom is that, because you got to be a little bit of an a-hole, right? You got to be an a-hole to be like, all right, we're not going to follow these old mores and these old standards and traditions. And you got to be a little bit of an a-hole. So I'm looking for that a-hole right now. It's Gavin Newsom. And I'm hoping by the time we're like done with this primary, they're all a-holes, all of them. They're all saying we're going to use the powers that Trump has now created for this office to push a progressive agenda.
Yeah, we know. And listen, we're not going to win, y'all. Anybody who wants, let's go back to norms. Let's go back to norms. Forget it. That's not motivating a soul. The other thing we need to do, I'm sitting.
Norms didn't help anybody.
No, they didn't. Norms. We don't need norms.
It helped the elite. Like, that's what it did. It protected the elite. Like, stuff needed to get blown up.
Mm.
not Trump style, but now that Trump has given us the permission to do so, we can blow it up our style. Let's bust up monopolies. Let's dig into
bust it up.
Pollution and price fixing and not use we'll use the courts and we'll have 6-year lawsuit, you know, at the FEC. No. Like, do what Trump does. Go at these companies and put the power of the state threatening their ability to do business if they don't comply.
Yeah.
We know we can do this. Why wouldn't we? Other than like, it's unseemly. Like, no, screw that. Like, we're going to do everything that Trump did. Republicans said it was fine, so you can't complain. We're only using the tools that they have created because the old system did not really work for people. And that's why we've been losing as Democrats. Mm-hmm. People did not feel economically secure. It helped, Mark, it helped us in San Francisco and Chicago and New York. Like, those places are booming. But rest of the country got left behind. And that's just a reality.
You're right. All right, folks, read the latest at dailycoast.com. Follow Daily Coast. It's so important that we all continue to do that. We'll do this again next week. I've been trying to get the American Federation of Government Employees president on. We've been planning with his schedule. Maybe he'll have him come on with us one day too, so you can talk to him. I'll read 107 days.
All right, and I'll interview you.
And then we're going to get Mom Donnie. But what's going to happen right now is Marcos is going to leave this stream. He's already dressed. You already got clothes on, right?
I got clothes on, but it's already noon.
Go, just go, go. Come on, man. Just get in the Uber and go. You good. Please, for me. Have fun with me today.
All right. Thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate you. Glad I'm back. Glad we're back. And this is fun.
Yeah, glad we're back. This is great. Got a lot of catching up. Marcos Melissa's Thursday Coast Show. Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.